Sony's decision to end physical disc production in 2028 is being framed as a format story, but it's really a market structure story. The used game market is worth $7.2 billion annually. Physical discs are the mechanism that makes secondary markets possible. You buy a game, finish it, sell it used, someone else buys it cheaper. When discs disappear, the entire used market disappears with them, because digital licenses aren't transferable. Analysts are right to say this market will keep shrinking and eventually disappear. The only question is the timeline.
For consumers, especially younger and lower-income gamers, this is a genuine access problem. Used games are often the entry point for people who can't afford $70 or $80 at launch. Sony is essentially optimizing its revenue model. Eliminating the resale market means more full-price sales at the cost of accessibility. Whether antitrust regulators in the EU or UK see this as an abuse of platform power is worth watching. The European Commission has shown more interest than US regulators in digital market structure questions.
The Jeff Koons copyright ruling from the appeals court is genuinely significant for visual artists and the legal theory of appropriation art. Koons has been sued multiple times over his practice of directly appropriating other artists' images into his sculptures and large-scale works. This dismissal suggests the court found either that the original work wasn't substantially reproduced, or that Koons's transformation of the source material was sufficient to constitute fair use. The precedent this sets is relevant not just for contemporary art, but for AI image generation, where the transformation question is the central unresolved legal issue.
The Tate brothers' story is a footnote in a busy week. But Caroline Leavitt confirming the White House won't block their UK extradition is a clean break from the speculation that Trump's orbit might shield them. Andrew and Tristan Tate face 59 criminal charges in Britain. The administration apparently decided that whatever political benefit came from their relationship with Musk and Trump-adjacent influencer networks wasn't worth the diplomatic and legal cost of intervening in a UK criminal proceeding.
Bezos pushing an AI-focused Prime Video redesign is the streaming story of the week that most reflects where the platforms think they're going. Prime Video has roughly 200 million subscribers globally. An AI-focused redesign presumably means better content recommendations, smarter search, and potentially AI-generated marketing materials or even short-form content. The question is whether any of that actually improves the user experience in ways that subscribers care about, or whether it's infrastructure investment in search of a use case.
Now let's do the what if we're wrong exercise, and I want to apply it to the Iran conflict, specifically to the consensus view that the US bombing campaign is working, that Iran is under serious pressure, and that a deal is eventually coming. That's the Rubio position. That's the market position. $100 oil reflects a risk premium, not a forecast that the conflict becomes permanent. And it's the dominant analytical frame I've heard from most serious foreign policy observers this week.
Let me Steelman the alternative. What if Iran's begging for a deal language, which comes entirely from Rubio, not from Iranian officials, is the American side's self-serving characterization rather than an accurate read of Tehran's posture. Iran's leadership has survived severe economic pressure before. The 2012 to 2015 sanctions regime, the maximum pressure campaign of 2018 to 2020. The Islamic Republic's political legitimacy, to the extent it rests on anything, rests in part on resistance to American coercion. Accepting a deal on terms that look like capitulation to domestic audiences could be more destabilizing to the regime than continuing the conflict.
And there's a deeper assumption embedded in the pressure is working thesis that the Iranian government is a unitary actor that can make and implement a deal. What if the internal fracture within the Iranian system means there's no single decision maker who can credibly commit to terms? The IRGC, the Supreme Leader's Office, and whatever remains of the reformist faction all have different stakes in any deal. If we're wrong about Iran's ability to deliver on a negotiated settlement, then the strikes continue indefinitely while the diplomatic framework produces nothing.
The indicator to watch, if this alternative thesis is correct, is whether Iran's proxies escalate rather than reduce activity. If Hezbollah increases rocket fire if Houthi attacks accelerate rather than slow, if there are direct Iranian strikes on U.S. assets in Iraq or Syria, those would be signals that Tehran is preparing for a long conflict rather than moving toward an exit. Conversely, a measurable reduction in proxy activity would support the begging for a deal. Thesis.
The honest version of this is that we're 13 nights into a conflict where the information environment is shaped almost entirely by CENTCOM press releases, a Secretary of State with strong incentives to project strength, and Iranian government statements filtered through a controlled media environment. Epistemic humility isn't just appropriate here. It's the only responsible posture.